I had a yes or no question. I just, would you take the super soldier serum?
Next question.
Thank you so much, you guys. We've got to move on. I'm sorry.
To episode 47 of the Brown and Black podcast. My name is Jack Rico.
And I'm Mike Sargent.
And every week we take a look at race and pop culture through a brown and black lens. Mike, we're closing in on 50.
I know, it's hard to believe this is episode 47. Wow. It'll be
that's a full year almost.
That's a solid year. Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's a long time.
We won't talk too much about, you know, what it's like to be 50 because we're not there yet, but we should kind of do like a big celebration for the 50. I don't know, maybe bring in like a big star or maybe not.
Or maybe just do make like it about, a best of, maybe look back, like a look back at
yeah,
what we've
like
covered.
Yeah, like a look back. But we're closing in, and we thank all of you for supporting us. We thank all of you for taking the time out and downloading the podcast, these episodes. We've gone through a lot of growth. We've seen the country completely disassemble itself in the last year, and now we're seeing it being patched together. I think a 50th episode would be an interesting sort of take a look back at the way the world was through our own eyes.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Doing this show with you allows us to discuss things and look at things that, you know, we may not have been able to explore if we didn't have a show where that's what we decided to explore.
And what a way to pick a year to deconstruct the world.
I think that that's what we do. I think a culture critic, we're criticizing or looking at culture with a critical eye. In our case, both the Black and Latino eye. But, you know, one thing is, you know, we were talking earlier or yesterday about the fact that we don't talk as often as we should. But one of the things that made us, or made me anyway, want to do the show with you is the kinds of conversations that we have. So I'm looking forward to the next 50.
Ah, oh, that's the way to say it, Mike. Yeah. In today's episode, we're going to be talking to Danny Ramirez, an actor in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Sometimes there's nothing to do until there's something to do.
That's bizarrely wise.
Well, I'm a bizarrely wise man, Sam.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Torres.
For sure. Wait, yo, you forgot the wings.
Keep them.
Are we in the midst of seeing the making of the first Latino movie star in Danny Ramirez?
But that brings up the topic to me of bankable Latino stars.
And what was the last time we had one, Mike? You know, this is like the thing that if we start, I mean, one of the biggest complaints I've had is, and every time I interview an actor, a director, a producer, or an executive, I'm always asking, why is it that us Latinos do not have a leading man or a leading female bankable movie star that can carry a movie? They're all whites or black. And now Asians have guy from Crazy Rich Asians?
Yes, they do. Not. Yes, they do. Hey, wait, and on. Let's not forget the guy
Shang-Chi.
And I just
Kumail Nanjiani. So Indian Americans have him, you know, in leading movies, except Latinos. Let's talk about the quick difference between a Latino movie star and a Latino actor. A Latino actor can play supporting role. They can play extra. They can play everything. The prestige, Mike, though, is the protagonist role. And how many Latino protagonists are there currently that can lead a movie? And let's define a blockbuster hit. $100 million, man, for argument's sake. If you can make $100 million just on your name alone, like Mark Wahlberg can, you're a movie star. How many Latinos, female or male, do you know, Mike, that are Latinos and that could bank $100 million by themselves, just carrying the movie by their name alone?
Well, first of all, there are none.
It's not that Latinos haven't been given the opportunities to lead their own movies. Jennifer Lopez, for some time in the mid-2000s, when she had a number one album and a number one movie all at the same time, she was working with Matthew McConaughey and The Wedding Planner. You know, she's had a lot of lead roles. None of them have hit $100 million. And so that's why they haven't given her lead roles. But she is probably the closest movie star that we've had in the last generation of Latinos. You then take a look at Diego Luna, who was in Rogue One, but then what? Because he wasn't supposed to be the lead of that movie.
Dude, I got a list for you. I want to walk you through it. I'm with you.
Pedro Pascal in The Mandalorian. He was recently in Wonder Woman, but not as a lead. He's a lead on TV. That's not the same exact thing.
Not even close.
Oscar Isaac, Star Wars. Look at the rest of his movies. They're all independent films. Oscar Isaac hasn't been able to lead a movie where he makes $100 million and make him a bankable star. Michael Peña, Fantasy Island, flopped. Danny Trejo, Machete, didn't do $100 million. Zoe Saldana was given Nina Colombiana, her own lead movies. Couldn't hack it. Couldn't break what people wanted in box office expectations. Penelope Cruz, Javier Bardem, they're not Latino, but they're Hispanic. They've never broken $100 million. So these are some of the biggest people, and I do think that the Benicios del Toros, the Andy Garcias, the Jimmy Smiths have never broken $100 million, but they've been given lead roles. So is it enough, Mike, to just have a lead role, or do we actually try and replicate white Hollywood movie stars where they crack 100 all the time like a Mark Wahlberg?
Well, I don't think so. I think you build a movie star, even if it's built quickly. You know, Will Smith would not be what he was, or even Denzel, if they did not do a lot of TV and make themselves acceptable to the larger audience. Without Fresh Prince, there would have been no Independence Day. Without St. Elsewhere, there would have been no Cry Freedom, and then, you know, all the other films that Denzel did that started to get him acclaim. So, and believe me, he did a lot of crap first. I think, though, things are truncated now. I think the question you ask is enormously valid, because what does it take? We've had a number of them. I mean, right now, there are at least 10 young black male actors, you could say, that have box office recognition. They may not be able to necessarily lead a film, but they're all poised that they could be a role.
Michael B. Jordan.
A role away. Right? You know, Michael B. Jordan. Chadwick Boseman was there.
Well, he's already A-list. Michael B. Jordan's already
A-list. Beyond A-list at this point. But yeah. So, I mean, the Rocky movies, Creed movies made a ton of money. So I'm just saying that we're in a place now where there are at least a dozen, okay, for black males. We don't have to talk about white males. Like you mentioned, Henry Golding. And Shang-Chi's coming. That actor is definitely going to. And I just saw a Mortal Kombat where they got a kind of a, he's mixed Asian. He looks kind of white, but he's.
But yeah, but you're recognizing a lot more Asian leads now. Jackie Chan, you know, a major Asian lead for the last 30 years, in my opinion. We just don't have one, man. We just don't have one. I mean, look, there are some of them that you've identified that have the potential to be, along with Danny Ramirez. Anthony Ramos just got cast, or there's been rumors, but I think he's already been cast as the new protagonist of the new reboot of Transformers, with Angel Manuel Soto directing, a Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. So that whole movie might be a Latino Transformers. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think it's time.
Then he's the lead in The Heights, which I saw. So he's one of the few ones that has some heat, but it's still out to be proven whether he can crack $100 million and be a bona fide A-list movie star in Hollywood, that won't fizzle out like a Benicio del Toro. Then you have Melissa Barrera, who was in Vida on TV, and now she's also in The Heights, and she just shows so much promise. Rachel Ziegler, which has been a phenomenon of an actress, a lot of hype behind her, behind West Side Story, Isabella Merced, who used to be called Isabella Moner. She was the Latina girl in the 2017 Transformers movie, if you remember. She was also Dora the Explorer, and that movie couldn't crack 100. Selena Gomez has done a couple of acting jobs here and there, but she's not a bankable lead. And then you have this kid who was also in the Bumblebee movie with Haley Steinfeld, Jorge Lettenborg Jr., who is Dominican. We can go on and on and on about potential. We can go on and on. But dude, Danny Ramirez in particular just seems like he's been chosen to become the next movie star.
I found interesting looking at Danny's resume and looking at who he plays and at the time we're in. You're given a lot of great context, I think, to understanding where the Latino actor is and what the image is of the Latino star. There just really isn't one. There's no template. You can't say, oh, you could say Brad Pitt is a Robert Redford type, but you couldn't say Danny Ramirez is a anybody's type because he's got to be his own now. And I think that's a challenge. But what I also think is interesting is that he's a sidekick. He's a sidekick to another sidekick. And the history of sidekicks in movies is one thing, in movies and stories, but it's also an interesting thing in the Marvel Universe. So I wonder if now that we're entering this age of the sidekick, of the B-side, of the smaller hero becoming a hero, there are all these characters that you never heard of that are becoming superheroes. And I think that, you know, there've been a few times where they've tried to make a brown action hero. You know, the kid from Twilight, he made a couple action films that didn't go anywhere.
No, he wasn't Latino, though. Was he?
No, but he's brown.
Oh, right.
He's brown. And I say brown just to say that, you know, it's more than just being a Latino hero. Like, okay, name another brown
Kumail Nanjiani.
Again.
Brown guy.
Right. Brown guy. So I'm just saying it's not just, I mean, there's white, there's a few black that are coming up, but then brown is wide open.
Brown is wide open, Mike. And it's interesting when you start looking at Danny's, and this is one of the reasons that I happen to think that Danny has the makings of it, and I think he's been chosen for this, because most Latino actors that come up through the Hollywood ranks are crossing over. That's been the whole thing. They've worked in Telemundo novelas, at Televisa, at Univision. They're working in novelas. Pero cómo puede ser, amigo? ¿Cómo me tratas así, huh? Right?
I'm casting you tomorrow, Jack.
Just cue up all the audio and novella music right there. And we're so accustomed to them crossing over, or they come up, you know, they start off as gang members and maids and every stereotypical reductive role that you can possibly think of is what we start off as. But not Danny. Danny started off in The Affair in 2015 as he left NYU. The kid goes to NYU, one of the best film schools in America, probably in the world, right? And out of that, he goes into The Affair on HBO. Then he gets a gig at Blindspot. Then Orange is the New Black. Then the Fox TV series that people were talking about, like it's the X-Men, The Gifted. Then he goes to Netflix's On My Block. Then he does Valley Girl. Then he does The Falcon Winter Soldier, Top Gun Maverick. And now you're looking at a guy that just everything has been mainstream. And I don't know if he truly understands how hard it's been for so many other people, because everything seems that it's been so easy for him. And he's a Latino. What happened to all the discrimination that other Latino actors are going through? What happened to, look, he plays Latino roles, but these Latino roles, when you look at them on TV, they don't feel like they're Latino. They just feel like they're American. They're just default, normal, you know, no race, no ethnicity. It's just a role.
What I think is also interesting is when you give us that opportunity, and I say us, I mean brown and black folks, the opportunity to rise. We do.
Right. And I think the big question here is, Mike, and I'm not sure if you can answer it, but try and give it a go, man. what constitutes a movie star? How do you create one? Is it the fans that create the movie star? Is it the talent themselves that create their own movie stardom? Or is it Hollywood and its machinery of publicists, managers, agents that create and manufacture a movie star?
I think it's all three. I think that one, in terms of that it factor, you know, there are people who are just watchable. You see them in a movie, there's a movie star on screen, and they're just in the background fiddling with a knife. And you're like, wow, who is that guy? Who is, you know, there's a lot of careers like that. James Coburn's my favorite example because he was in The Magnificent Seven and basically threw a knife, hardly said anything, but he was so cool that you remembered him and he became, you know, the superstar, and he was. But all of that being said, I think so. There is an it factor. Same thing with Star Wars, Harrison Ford. I mean, Luke Skywalker was a star, but Harrison Ford had the career. Now, in terms of the fans, I think that the first two are kind of connected because people have to resonate with you. You know, if you're Tom Hanks, it's easy when you're funny, I think, or easier for people to resonate with you, to open up to you. If you're Will Smith or you're Tom Hanks or you're Robin Williams, I think they're, you know, Richard Pryor, Bill Cosby, people who made you laugh, you're going to like them. And then people who can move you as an actor, Jack Nicholson, you know. So I think there's fans. You have to have fans of your work, your style, Christopher Walken, you know, whoever it is. People love your style. Just who you come across as, De Niro, people who are loved. Then the third factor is the machine. Now, the machine can manufacture stars, but those stars generally don't last and have a lot of haters because they're nothing. They're manufactured. There are people, I'm sure we could name stars who you shake your head and wonder why they had a career.
So it'll be interesting to see what the next move for Danny Ramirez and his team is going to be, because he's one step away from being put on the pedestal as the new and maybe first Latino movie star of the modern Hollywood era. And I'm crossing my fingers to see if it happens, Mike. So Danny Ramirez on our show today discussing Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Top Gun Maverick, and the one question that Mike asked him that essentially exploded Zoom when he answered it. Danny! ¿Qué pasa, parce? ¿Cómo estás?
Yo bien, bien, bien. Todo aquí en Nueva Zelanda.
First of all, congratulations on all your success and welcome to the Brown and Black podcast. Got a chance to see Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And what was interesting to me right off the bat, I mean, you're a young actor. And as a young actor to be in Top Gun Maverick, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, dude, and it's like you started in The Affair. Then you kind of just kept on going on the block on Netflix. And it was like one after another. These aren't, oh, comencé en las novelas, comencé haciendo esto, and then I crossed over. That is not your story, dude. That's so many of our stories that we have to kill ourselves 20, 30 years just trying to make it to where you are, and then we call it a career.
I think it's the people that came before me for sure made it easier for me to hop into the stories that were available then. Like, even when I did The Affair, it was at that point, that was kind of just the work that was coming across the plate. But for that to be a little bit more of the norm, that had to be Oscar Isaac showing up in Drive and killing it in like a supporting role. And everything that Pedro Pascal had done, that was at that point, he didn't get a shine on until like he really came into prominence more recently. But he had to do all these bit parts. So I think a lot of people laid the groundwork, and I was able to catch some of those breaks early on. Cause it, to me, doing The Affair opposite of Dominic, Five Lines opposite of Dominic West, I was like, okay, wow, this is, and him being so nice about it, it kind of took away this cloud of mystery of like, oh, I don't belong here, or I do. And Dominic basically, like we kind of played around. He's like, oh, you got Five Lines. And in the first line, I got a scene in your eyes that you're afraid. And the second one, you're going to die. And the third one, you're making a full recovery. Like, so we played around with this thing that kind of took away the illusion of whether or not I belong there, just cause I'm like, I'm joking around just like he is. Like we're one in the same. And so as these auditions kept coming across, that kept getting a little bigger and bigger, it was realizing my self-worth of like, I went to NYU and I tried to put in more work than everybody else in my own way. Not necessarily always showing up on class, but like if I didn't go to class, it's because I wanted to read a book about something because I disagreed with this version of it. I don't know. So it was like, it was knowing that like I belonged in the room, I belonged throwing down, and that I had something to offer. And it took me a while to get to this place, to the place of knowing that like, oh, I'm bringing some heat, hopefully. Because even the first time that I told, I had a teacher at some point, I won't say who, that was like, oh, you'd be a good sidekick character, but like, as like my cap, as like, that's it. Like, that's what you'll get to one day, like after I become an extra for a few years. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, maybe that's just, which was normal for her to say 8 years ago, 7 years ago. It was just, we didn't see prominent parts go out to Latinos or at all. So I don't know. It came from this place of like finally having worth and self-worth and knowing that I could throw down in these films.
Wow. You said so much in what you just said. You covered probably about three of my questions too. So, but I love everything you said. And it's very specific, the time that you're becoming an actor too. Like you said, there are definitely some doors been opened, but I just have to ask you now just to talk about the parallel between your career and, as you say, a sidekick. Being a sidekick, you know, that might have been a thing, you know, whatever that was 20 years ago, and maybe in a different genre, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they're both sidekicks, and now they're starring. And a lot of what the series is about how sidekicks rise to the next level and become something else and become, you know, so you're the Padawan now. So my question to you is, looking at where you're at now, like being around, you know, those who came up as sidekicks and knowing that this character, they made you up for the series, anything could happen to you. So how exciting is that for you as it might parallel your career?
Well, I think it's, I'm honored. First of all, I was the entire time my eyes were like just taking everything in, making sure I was experiencing it in the moment. And I think Anthony's career has been one that I've related to a lot. And recently that it came out that he's, if you're in a scene opposite of him, you're going to win an Oscar or get nominated. And it's interesting to see the parallels of that. And then that being one of the themes that is wrestled with of like, what is it to take a mantle on and what is it to take this next step and if society is ready for you to take it specifically and if you, yeah. So I think the wrestling of that internal conflict and what that means, and I've had it in real life and seeing it play out, I think is quite beautiful in how it's being talked about and it's a bright light is being shown on it. Because in the current like social political climate, I think that's, this show is perfectly aligned with everything and having an amazing actor like Anthony be Sam in this storyline. I think he's able to give it all these layers and show that internal conflict, because it's not an easy, like if it was easy, there'd be no drama within it, you know, if he sure. knew from point A to point B. So I think getting to where he's getting to internally, I think it's helped a lot as I watch it with my own struggles of what that sidekick in real life to prominence kind of feels like, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What is your preparation for this particular role with Joaquin Torres? What did you want to accomplish with him in particular?
Well, I think the uniform speaks for itself, especially military uniforms. I think there's so much that could get tropey with just like, oh, you wear a uniform and that means that you are the uniform, which in very much you represent the uniform. But I think there is so much, I've been lucky to meet a lot of people in that serve in the military, in the Air Force, in the Navy, and each has such a unique personality that I was like, oh, it's just like, who is the person outside of the uniform? Like, he's a millennial that loves technology and loves gifts and loves cracking jokes every now and then and is light on his feet. So I think my preparation was like the uniform will speak for itself. But beyond that, this Joaquin will just be a ray of sunshine and just filled with life. And based on, and then just doing the scenes, we'll figure out so much in regards to how Anthony and I played each scene. Was just, there was an excitement of like discovering which way it went. So I think it was bringing that to the table and then just letting it become what it became, which I think it frees and it creates a more three-dimensional person, I think, than necessarily playing towards the uniform or playing into the fact that he's in the military. I think it was giving myself ownership of a real person that woke up, brushed his teeth, had his breakfast, and then put on his uniform, and he was very much his own person. That was more so the preparation was like, okay, what'd be a fascinating character to add this dynamic into in the seasoning into the story that then who knows where he'll go.
You know, as I'm listening to you and I'm picturing you on set and I'm thinking about the scenes, again, I think about the parallel. I was reading up on the character and in Wikipedia, a director says, oh, he's a little bit of a puppy dog. But what I thought about is, you know, they say, you know, if human beings could learn at the rate a child learns, you know, from like 1 to 5, we'd all be geniuses. So a lot of what you're doing, you're like, you're not just in the military, you're working with the Falcon. So you're in this really high, you know, you could be a sidekick to anybody, but you're watching him a lot. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are about what do you think your character's learning from Falcon? Because, you know, absolutely. I see a lot of shots of you watching him.
Yeah, no, and I think and I tried to. A lot of that was things moments I found to, and I've said this before that it's like I had to pinch myself like that's Falcon, all right. That is wow. This is a person that like everyone knows. He's a megastar in his own right. He's a badass, and I get to work with him. And I think the reality of that, like what that would equate to, like if I got to work with LeBron James every single day. and he somehow was able to give me his abilities. I think that'd be awesome, but I'd be soaking in every single moment, the attention to detail as to how he does, how he puts on the shoes or how he recovers post game. So I was thinking in this as working with Falcon as like, okay, he'd be picking up absolutely everything. He'd be taking it in. 'Cause like, you never know when, if the next mission that they have, if they're like, all right, you know what, Joaquin, actually, it's not for you. At that point, it's like, okay, well, I had my 1 week. You know, I had my one week.
Right.
And like, that was sick. So it was all these moments of like, of knowing that it was special and it was important. And I think that's why even he goes out and he says he's going to keep his like ear to the ground online. And instead he goes out to the field and like, jumps in because I think he takes on the opportunity that's presented, which is to help Sam out, and not just like helping him out behind the computer. He goes and ends up getting his ass kicked, but I think
he recovers. He recovers.
Yeah, he definitely does. but
he does all right,
and he just grabs life by the horns and just goes for it.
Any interest in working in Spanish now that you got Heat? Right. There's been a lot of talk amongst Hispanic actors in the industry that as soon as they start working with American white mainstream people, that there is no desire whatsoever to ever work in Spanish. It's like, I made it already. Is there any identity that you want to be able to carry through storytelling in working in Spanish in Latin America, Mexico, Spain?
No, sí, por supuesto, siempre quisiera trabajar en español si se presenta la oportunidad. I think so to say it again, to me, it's the story that now with this idea of being able to do projects that I'm more aligned with, I think it's all about story. Doesn't matter if it's going to be in English or in Spanish, whatever is a story that captivates me. And I think there's so much that of stories that in Spanish, speaking countries in South America, Central America, in Spain, everywhere that haven't been told. And, something that I've seen myself do as I'm now developing projects and want to be a producer and do all these things. Cause for a moment, the parts that I wanted to do weren't being written. So I was like, if they're not being written, I got to write them. I got to find a way to develop this story or that story or whatever it may be. I don't want to say them yet just because people might steal them, but but I absolutely plan to do Spanish speaking roles, Spanish speaking projects in general, not just that my characters, you know, that speak Spanish, but like an entire an entire narrative film. The first film that I just finished writing is I'm a first generation American, but raised as Spanish as my first language. Mi mamá mexicana, mi papá colombiano. So like I was in a pocket of Miami that everyone around me was Hispanic. And I think that to me is incredibly exciting and close to home and special to me is that community of Hondureños, Nicaragüenses, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, literally Venezuela, everyone. So like I'd go to school and it'd be a class of 25 and it was from 24 different countries.
Wow.
Because there's two Cubans, obviously. There's more Cubans. So to me, like that is a part of the U.S. that I want to tell that would capture so much of other underrepresented countries, but also give us a way in and make it very American, but also Central and South American and Caribbean. But yeah, so I think it's incredibly important. I've never even thought of that as I made it, so therefore let me shed it. Let me stray away from it. I think whatever is the best story that comes to the forefront that is a story that I could best serve is what I'll probably do, no matter if it's a Colombian in Germany. And if I have to learn German, that would be cool. Like, so I think I don't want to put any restrictions on the work that I want to do or think that I just want to work with white creatives. Cause I don't, I want to work with directors across the board of wherever they're from, if they just have a way in. And I think that's the magic of what I've seen in this industry of what I want to kind of do is there's so much work going around now, but it's rare when you find that somebody's vision, their soul and the story and the execution is going to align. And those are the rare ones to come across. And luckily I've been blessed with being in a couple of those already. So I think that's kind of what I'm chasing, to always be a part of stories that I think resonate, not just to tell it for the sake of it, you know, like, that's why I feel so blessed to be a part of the Falcon Winter Soldier, because it's an incredibly important story in the year 2021.
I have to imagine that at this point in time, and like you said, there is a lot of work out there, and we are in a, you know, probably the best place we've been yet, you know, as people of color, you know, being able to tell our stories in front of and behind the camera. I'm wondering, these experiences now, you know, working on these big films, you know, you booked Top Gun, you know, and you're watching, you know, you said something very powerful before about being on set for The Affair and kind of realizing it's possible, like whatever you thought you could do. And that's transformative in my opinion. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, throughout this experience, especially in the last 2 years, especially where you're at right now, has your mind just opened more, or this is like, well, now your plans, these are your plans all along. So it's just, you know, you have foreseen this.
Well, I think it's the way that before I even started, I was playing soccer in Atlanta in college, and I saw Riz Ahmed being the lead of this movie called The Reluctant Fundamentalist. And
yep.
I had no idea who he was. I had no idea anything really about movies. I was just there because I wanted to make $120 and had a sprained ankle. So I wasn't playing that. But it was also my birthday. So I got to see Riz.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, I'm a freshman in Atlanta. My ankle sprained. Like, let me make $120. Oh, I got it. And it was to be an extra for a soccer like montage scene that he did. And I saw and I saw everything in the set operating around him. And I was like, wait a second, he's not white. And then I was like, oh shit. Oh damn. I guess I could do this if I, not that I didn't think I could do this right now, but it opened my mind of like, oh, in this, there's a possibility of something in this venue that I thought was only, like I'd only seen movies where like there was white people leading, right? So seeing Riz in this movie directed by Mira Nair, I was just like, okay, it kind of like started the spark of like, you wouldn't just be some like day player at the end of the day. Like there is a light to tell a story that belongs to you and that is for your people. And I bought my first acting book the next day. I ended up at NYU a year and a half later. And so I think there is a lot about realizing, well, if what we're doing is playing human beings, you've been doing this, Jack and Mike, like your whole lives, like since you were born, that's what we try to replicate in stories. So I was like, when I realized that, I'm like, wait, I'm just as valuable than everyone that I've seen on screen or everyone that is off screen. Like we're all just like, if we're telling a story, all you need to be is human. And that's all you have to bring to the table. And we all have this magic that we could bring to the table. And when I thought of that, I was like, oh shit, it kind of took away this, like the secret of it all.
Right.
It was just like, just be. And then you could work on your craft and add things to it. Once you realize, like, at its core, you just have to be this little ball of energy, either high or subdued, or whatever it may be for the character. But it was like, it's just, you just have to be, and that's it.
Okay. Well, all right. I want to ask you now, having the experiences and the wisdom, just, and again, this is kind of building on that. And you mentioned that you're thinking about producing. Do you have like a secret? This is really, I would love to play the Latin James Bond or do you have any secret roles? Like, you know, from an idol, like, you know, I want to be that lawyer, that Jack Nicholson, you know, that kind of role.
I have a few that I'm going to keep reserved. Yourself?
All right. Okay.
Gems. But the ones that I would say, as you said, I think being James Bond would be amazing. I think there's
it would be
a different sazon if I was James Bond. But I think also there's Scarface. I've mentioned a few times because I think there's something iconic that I'd love to play in that, if there was ever the remake. Mentioned a Golden Boy movie, Oscar De La Hoya. That'd be really
okay. That would be great.
Golden Boy would be phenomenal. A remake of La Bamba I had mentioned, that'd be really cool. Okay, there's a lot of stuff out there, but then there's like really secret ones. But
okay, all right, so you got those secret ones. Okay.
Well, I have my last question to you, Danny. We have very little left. Top Gun Maverick. It's been pushed and pushed and pushed. Now we're finally going to see it in November, as I understand it. Who do you play? What was your experience from it? And what do you take away? What can you tell us about your experience with Top Gun Maverick? And what can we expect?
Well, so I play a character named Fanboy. And I think working with Tom has been one of the biggest blessings that I could have ever asked for. It was going to like a master's in film. And he made it known pretty early on that the door was open with any questions. So whether it was for him, for Joseph Kaczynski, the director, for Claudio Miranda, the DP, for Chris McQuarrie, for Eddie Hamilton, the editor, like across the board, the doors were open if I had any questions. If, cause they early on, they're like, all right, you six that we picked are not just for the role. It's because we see you as like the next wave of talent that is going to push, is going to take story and push the envelope and keep telling stories that have to be told. So when he said that, at first I was like, well, I've heard that before. I've heard people say the door is always open, but it's not. So I was at first, I'm like, okay, maybe that's just like what you say to get morale up. But as soon as the questions started happening and started asking them and everyone started asking them, you saw like, oh no, they were serious. The door was always open. There were always, if there was any film references or questions we had, Chris was there with his iPad and he'd pull up references to like Lawrence in Arabia or like a bunch of different amazing, Glorious Bastards, all these things that he'd pull up and he'd explain to us composition and character. And so it was just, I was just there to soak it all in. And on days that I wouldn't work, that I wasn't called to set, I'd still go and just like hover behind Claudio Miranda. Cause I'm like, this man won an Oscar. Like how am I, like if I have the ability to be here behind his shoulder, seeing how he sets up a shot, like, of course I have to. So to me, that was one of the most special experiences of how open they were with their knowledge. They wanted to share it. Whenever they shared it, it felt good. Like it felt like they were feeling good about it. You know how sometimes people share information and they're like, okay, this is the answer. Like, this is what this is about. But they were like, take it here, my information. Like, and so I was like, that's a blessing and a half. That's like, I can't even quantify what that, like, it just, it was when I walk away from it all, like as time like passes, I think that's what I'm going to remember the most. And because it's also awesome to be up there in F-18s, and we had like 12, 13 hours of F. So that's great. That's great. I'm not going to complain. Wow. I'm excited for everyone to see it, because it's, I've never seen a story that dynamic told in that way. It's definitely going to blow people's brains.
Well, I know we're out of time, right. I had a yes or no question. Just, would you take the super soldier serum? That's really the last question.
Next question.
Thank you so much, you guys. We got to move on.
And that's it for this 47th episode of Brown and Black. We'd like to thank Danny Ramirez for being on the show. And if you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. Your help will allow us to be heard by many more people. This episode was edited by Joshua Tirado. You can follow our comments and opinions at Brown Black Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We'll talk to you next time on another episode of Brown and Black.